and justice for all.
And our first order of business is 3.2, a public vote on the denied district transfer appeal hearings. We'll start with student 65452.
And that a student was not represented tonight.
Okay. So we will actually start with student 62332. Do we have a motion?
I move to uphold the denial of the interdistrict transfer
for student 62332. Is there a second?
A second.
So Dee Dee and Sheila. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Thank you. And now, is it just student number three?
Yes.
Now student number three.
I move to uphold the denial of the interdistrict transfer appeal for student three.
On a second.
Thank you. Dee Dee and Sheila, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Are there any agenda deletions, additions, or changes of sequence? And do we have any superintendent remarks prior to public comment?
None.
Okay, we are opening public comment. Public comment is for the public to speak to that wishes to speak to the board on items that are not on issues that are not on the agenda. Is there anyone here who would wish to speak during public comment? Yes.
Is this on?
Yes. So if you start talking, we'll
and yep. Hold it up.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hi. My name is Rhonda Spray. Is there one?
Yeah, a little closer to your mouth will be good.
Okay, so I've lived on Swift Street for 28 years now, and I'm here to talk about natural bridges. So after last week's meeting and hearing the recommendations from the ad hoc committee, I'm a little ambivalent about the intent to build a sports complex on the Natural Bridges campus. Over the years, I've watched the decline of the campus and the surrounding buildings, and I always wonder why a valuable asset has been neglected and underutilized for so long. I'm talking about the entire 9-acre site that runs from Stockton Avenue on the southern end to the rarely used service yard on the far north end, and everything in between those two points. Right now, it's a sad collection of rundown buildings and gardens. I see Natural Bridges representing a unique opportunity for the school system. There's potential to build an extracurricular activity center with bond revenue, but the land comes with an interesting blend of zoning issues situated between industrial at the north end and residential surrounding all the other borders where most of us fussy neighbors live, within earshot of Natural Bridges fields and playground. We hear it all. Kids on the playground, school bells, soccer, lacrosse, all the players on the field. There are no noise shields or buffer zone. It is an extension of our backyard. So I'm asking that you involve community stakeholders early in the planning process before any decisions are made about developing anything on the site. More information needs to be collected from the neighbors that will ultimately have to live with the noise, lights, traffic, parking issues, everything that follows any development on the site. I would ask that the planners consider all the space in the 9-acre site as a potential building site, in particular the northern boundary of the property, adjacent to the general industrial zone where the service yard currently is, and as far away from the neighboring residents that surround the site. This relocation could mitigate traffic and noise from affecting the majority of surrounding neighbors when an expanded gym, field, and any other recreational uses are developed on the site. A proactive approach to any commercial development is essential. Let's get beyond the piecemeal approach that's created a disjointed, underutilized, rundown piece of property known collectively as Natural Bridges. Be good neighbors. Expand your view beyond the footprint of the Natural Bridges pods. Build trust and respect.
with the neighbors by communicating, build and spend responsibly, optimize the use of the land, and develop a comprehensive site plan. Westsiders want community outreach and transparency with all aspects of developing the site. We deserve to know much more about the future of the complex, its scope, the target audience, needs it would fill, and especially where it would be placed with a 9-acre site. We all know that people support what they help create. They might even help pass the school bond. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Dory Lips, Mayor of Westside resident, 42 years. I'm not sick. I just like that on the record that before you move forward with any other ideas about the Natural Bridges Gym and field ideas, or as it's been labeled, sports complex, that it be put on hold. Myself and a list of other neighbors have all agreed that the idea of a sport complex is not what we want literally in our backyard. I'd suggest another ad hoc committee informed, and this time consistent of and include the neighbors of the West Side, not just people that are school women. Thank you.
Good evening. My name is Stephen Sveet. I am a recent West Side resident. And I agree with both of the prior speakers. And I think you might remember me a few weeks ago. There were two takeaway points I thought that I wanted to circle back with you about. Statements were made that I think just don't add up. One was we saw presentations on demographics that showed over the long run a continuous, gradual, but continuous decline in enrollment. That was a fact. The other fact is the ad hoc committee recommended raising the school site and holding the footprint for a future school site. So that doesn't add up. When we have enrollment numbers that say next year is the most important year to have a school site, then why raise it? It seems like an issue of bad faith. The other thing that came, the second point that came up in the meeting was one of the commissioners mentioned something about working with the city to create a sports complex. First time that term had ever been introduced. I checked the city's master plan of parks, which is currently underway. There's no mention of any sports complex there. I guess what I'm saying, so that was the second thing that didn't add up. And it adds to confusion about where the board stands, and that confusion is going to carry into an election cycle about the bond, I fear. So my recommendation, and I am an urban planner, but this, you're a property owner of a Keystone property. It may not be valuable anymore as an elementary school, but we heard a lot of good ideas of what other educational facilities might fit in there. But on top of that, you're in a dynamic West Side neighborhood that's rapidly changing with creative businesses, and this is one of the city's first live work housing sites right across Delaware from your site. There's a lot of dynamism going on. I would encourage you to work with the community and the city planners, the city of Santa Cruz, because as a major landholder in this district, I believe you have a civic obligation to help plan the site to the betterment of not only the school district, but all the neighbors. Thank you very much.
Any other public comment? Thank you very much. Superintendent's report.
Good evening. This last week has been filled with planning for August training, details for summer school, reviewing staffing, and other details to ensure a smooth opening to the 2016-17 school year. I want to thank our neighbors for coming again tonight to share with us their ideas and input, because it continues to inform us. The master planning, and I'm hoping you could leave your emails on that sign-in sheet for me. The master planning process to date is going to be presented, or the master planning, I'm sorry, I'm stumbling, because I read the wrong line. Tonight we have an update on our process for assessing whether to pursue or bond on the November ballot or not. And the master planning process to date is validating for your needs. At all of our buildings are between 50 and 103 years old. There's tremendous infrastructure needs. Four of them are historical landmarks. And from 2008 until last year, we were directed by the governor to put our dollars for maintenance into the basic operations of our schools. We went down to a 1% maintenance budget at the direction of the governor, which impacted our ability to maintain our properties. And given that they're aged, the deterioration is accelerated when you're not able to do the ongoing maintenance that you need to do. But when we had to use those maintenance dollars to open the doors and turn on the lights and make sure there were teachers in there to teach kids, it had a lasting impact. The need is really greater than even the, you know, we're looking at over $300 million identified need. And tonight you'll see that we could potentially move forward to ask for just over $200 million if we moved for the November election. The public is still providing us really important input, and that's been an important part of our process, and it continues to be, and it continues to need to be. I'm getting emails of ideas. We're keeping documents of what we might be able to do to best meet the needs and be good neighbors. Our team is continuing to be open in this process with the ultimate goal of ensuring adequate facilities for our students into the future. And one of the things that we don't know, and just going back to something that Stephen said, we are planning, we need to keep that Natural Bridges property, we need to keep a footprint for school. Because we can't predict as a school district what the need is going to be in 20 years. And the organized work that's happening to provide more workforce housing in our community comes through, we may have a need for another elementary school in 15 or 20 years. So we don't want to lose that footprint no matter what we do. That's going to be a really important piece of our planning and our thinking. Because we can't project the need, and we know that we aren't going to be able to get land again for that purpose in the future. So something for us to be considering as we move forward. And finally, I want to acknowledge that tonight is the final night, final board meeting for Assistant Superintendent Meeker and Assistant Superintendent Von Yaw. And we are incredibly grateful to them for their service to our school district in all the different ways that Angela served, from teaching to being a site administrator, a teacher leader, to the central office. And she goes on to serve us in our independent charter as the CEO of Delta Charter School. And we're super happy and excited for you, and we'll miss you very, very much. And Jim, in 16 months here, has made a tremendous difference for us, looking at systems, really looking at how we can streamline how we serve the district from the central office on the business side of the house, and earning great kudos and applause for bringing in a contract that brought up-to-date current technology for teachers to use in our workrooms in terms of copiers and scanners and those kinds of things at less cost than we were paying for all the leases we currently have. So we turn that over. I just give that one example because that's one where we got thank you notes from teachers. I've never seen that in a time that I've been in St. Charles. We had thank you notes saying this really had an impact. And there have been a million other things, and I'm just noting that one because it had such a tangible effect on working conditions for teachers and their ability to serve students really quickly. His work to build the master plan in the time he's been here, the work to support passing the parcel tax in the spring or in the fall were all incredibly tremendous contributions. And we wish him well in his next endeavor as head of school at San Joaquin Memorial in Madera, closer to where his family lives. So thank you, Jim.
Board reports. Sure, start with Sheila.
Okay. I don't have a long board report. I spent a lot of time this week talking with members of the community, mostly by email and some in person, and I learned a lot. It's been really good, and some of the people that I've met, I hope I keep connections with. I'm the person who said sports complex, and I'm laughing because in my family, my father would say, now just tell the truth about whatever, like how much it would cost to fix the house. And she would say, well, do you want the plain old ordinary truth, or do you want the truth with an Irish flourish? And he would say, the plain old ordinary truth. And I thought of that when everybody went nuts with sports complex, because I meant a gym and fields and courts that were made nice again. And my fantasy was, you know, the little jewel on Swift Avenue, you know, we would have this nice new group of sports facilities that the city would join with us to help be used. But, of course, I had to say sports complex, which I had absolutely no idea that that meant something entirely different. So please spread out to the people who are upset that I had no idea that I was inferring a huge monolithic thing. And that what I really meant was something along the lines of what Santa Cruz High has now, or Mission Hill has now. Just a nice gym and fields. And I imagined it over there by the ocean, and it seemed to me like such a lovely thing to imagine. So I'm a bit more like my mother than my father, I found out. But I learned my lesson, so I'm going to try just the plain truth from now on. Otherwise, it has been really interesting, and one of the reasons I got on the board, to be able to hear from the community and to be able to be challenged myself in terms of how I think. So I have found it to be one of my best couple of weeks trying to sort out what is needed and hearing from the community over there and thinking about what I would be like if I were over there. So I want to thank some of the people who talked today. I've talked to online and I've talked to in person, and I really want to thank you for that.
Hey, I went to the C Schools meeting and learned about some great youth employment opportunities and programs for at-risk students in middle school. It was reported at the Delta School Board meeting that the parents group raised $20,000 at their fundraiser event.
Nice. That's wonderful.
And there are some great plans for starting the new year involving more parents. And we said goodbye to Mary. And I want to express gratitude to Angela and Jim. You've done so much for the district, for everyone here, you know, the people that work here and the children who learn here. We've benefited from both of you. Thank you.
Well, in the week since our last board meeting, I continue to meet with community members at the possibility of a bond, and I know that right here in our audience we have the focus of our very furthest west side, but there is ample opportunity and people are quite excited, though understanding that, you know, the governor's formula for the state of California requires that we continue to ask ourselves to support what many of us grew up knowing as basic needs being met through our tax base. So the conversations have been good, and I'm happy to report that. And I, too, just want to express my gratitude to both Angela and to Jimmy. You will be sorely missed. You served our district and our board well, and our superintendent and our community. And I'm happy to know that Angela, I feel like you're really not leaving, because I think Delta is an incredible program. And as much as we'll miss Mary Gockel at the helm, I think that this will be a great transition for the students in the community. And for Jimmy, I'm just going to miss that laugh. So I think I'm happy for you and your family and your choices. And I'm sad to see you go. So thank you for all you've done.
I also want to thank the community members that I've spoken with, and for the good questions that you've raised and the comments that you've shared, that continue to make me think and consider possibilities and think outside the box.
And I also want to thank both Angela and Jim for helping me climb that very steep learning curve as a new board member. You made that process a whole lot easier, and I really appreciate having the opportunity to work with you both.
I also attended the City Schools Committee meeting, and we talked at great length, actually, about possibilities for National Bridges. We also talked about school safety and the need for safety on the west side on that site currently. And I was really pleased to hear about the Pride program, which has been expanded to a year-long program, and the great success that our middle schools are having. And it was really nice to hear the enthusiasm of SCPD about the success and the bond that they're making with the students who participate. So that was nice. And we got some great feedback from the mayor and from Councilman Comstock regarding planning needs for the city and their ideas about potential issues around the campus. So it was a good conversation.
And I also attended the City Schools meeting, was very impressed and excited about some of the things and the collaborations. I was particularly excited about the employment opportunities and plans for next year to increase advertisement and recruitment so that we can make sure that we maximize and make sure all the kids who can participate in the programs are able to. I want to thank Angela and Jim for their service. And I also want to honor Dr. Angela Meeker, who defended her dissertation yesterday.
Oh, my God.
So congratulations, Dr. Meeker. I know what that takes, and I'm so excited and proud that all the knowledge building that you did in the process of writing the dissertation gets to add to the knowledge capacity of our district. Okay, the consent agenda. Did I do something wrong?
No.
Oh, sorry. I forgot something. The consent agenda is for non-controversial items that can be passed in one roll call vote. Are there any items on the consent agenda that the board would like?
We did skip the approval of the minutes.
Ah, I did do something wrong. See, I knew that. We need to approve the minutes of the special meeting for denied inter-district transfer appeal hearings. We have a motion.
Move approval.
Thank you.
Second.
Claudia and Patty.
Thank you.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain?
Right there.
Did you abstain?
Abstain.
I don't have to say if I approve, right?
Abstain.
So Sheila and Jeremy abstain?
Yes, thank you.
And now it's time for the consent agenda.
Thank you, ma'am.
Are there items on the consent agenda that the board would like removed for discussion?
Hold on.
Are there any questions from the board on consent agenda?
I actually had a question, but we're having a hard time
finding the
consent agenda and the down a little further.
Yeah. You want to tell me, and you can look right here, Sheila.
There was one about adding a teacher
certificated personnel.
Yes.
8.1.1. Do you have a question, or do
just
you want to remove it?
Okay. Just a question.
Okay.
Can I ask it?
Yes.
Chris, what does that refer to?
I'm looking right now. So, are you talking about which position, Allison Blackwell or Shannon McGuire?
Say it again.
In which position, Allison Blackwell or Shannon McGuire?
Okay, sorry. Allison Blackwell, the special assignment.
So this was a part of our educator effectiveness grant, but we're bringing her in to serve in a PAR-like role to support teachers as a part of the educator effectiveness grant that was approved, budget that was approved by the board previously.
Okay, that's all I want to know. And should I do the gifts before we...
No, not quite yet. Are there any questions, members of the public that wish to speak to items on the consent agenda? Okay, do we have a motion for the
President Thompson, yes. I just want to point out that we haven't done the expulsions.
We're getting to that next.
Oh, okay.
Is there a motion for the consent agenda?
Move approval.
Second.
Roll call.
Aye.
Thank you. And report of actions taken in closed session. Claudia will report on actions, and then Sheila will talk about the gifts.
Can we report first?
Oh, no, Sheila can go first.
The gifts first?
Uh-huh.
Maybe by next year we'll figure this out. Okay, so we want to acknowledge a gift from Barbara Heliso in her continuous support of De La Viega through the Wells Fargo Matching Gifts Program, has contributed $2,600 between September 26, 2015 and June 9, 2016. So we're very grateful for that. And Santa Cruz High School, Jennifer McNulty and Brian McElroy donated $500 to the Santa Cruz High Moss Trial Team and $500 to the Santa Cruz High School Ceramics Class. So we're very grateful for that also.
And report on closed session.
The Board of Trustees heard information regarding denied inter-district transfer appeals for students 65452, 62332, and 3. The Board of Trustees took action on certificated, classified, and management leaves, retirements, resignations, and appointments. The Board of Trustees heard information on expulsion 15-15-16 and 18-15-16. The Board of Trustees heard an update and provided Superintendent Chris Monroe with direction regarding GSCFT negotiations. And we will be returning to closed session after this meeting.
8.2.2, public vote on expulsions. We need a motion for expulsion 15-15-16.
I move to expel student 15-15-16 through the end of the 2015-16 school year.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? 7-0.
Thank you.
Vote on expulsion 18-15-16. Do we have a motion?
I move to expel student 18-15-16 through the end of the first semester of the 2016-17 school year.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstain? Thank you. Okay, our first item is a staff report, an update on bond planning.
Thank you, President Thompson. It's my pleasure to introduce tonight Ms. Amanda Clifford from Clifford Moss, our district's bond campaign consultant. There's going to be an update on the process that we've been following, our next directional steps regarding the potential of a facility bond for the district. This is purely an informational item as we kind of recap of where we've been, where we would like to go, preparation for the next board meeting in July. So I'm going to turn this over to Ms. Amanda Clifford.
Good evening, President Thompson and members of the board. As Jim said, this is information only. We just wanted to give you an initial preview of what will be coming towards you as we continue to move through this process. So I wanted to give you an opportunity. I'll kind of go through this, but if you want me to go back or slow down, please let me know. I wanted to leave time basically for questions at the end. But again, no action is being taken tonight, so if there's additional questions, you can continue to direct them to Superintendent Monroe as we move forward in this process. All right, so our facilities improvement journey is leading us in the decision of our local school bond election. Again, no decision tonight, but we've been doing a lot of work, as we've heard from Superintendent Monroe and others. There's been a lot of process that has gone on with the community. Your polling, which said overwhelmingly the community supported moving forward with both the bond for the elementary school district as well as the high school. This is just an overview. I'm sure you've seen this before many times, either from Bonnie or myself, but the process that you've been going through, again, is a strategic process, and we take it very seriously in terms of our planning and making sure we're capturing every element. So as of right now, you're in that election preparation. We're not in campaign yet, and the board still has to take an action before this goes before voters. Again, we've been going through the approach. This is our three-track prong, district due diligence, board education and updates, as well as stakeholder engagement that's been extensive in this process. So tonight, I just want to briefly, again, review with you the package that you're going to be seeing. And it's quite an extensive group of documents, but we have time. So notice this one again tonight. We're looking at an action item for July 27th. The filing deadline is August 12th, and then the campaign window begins, and you have an independently funded campaign that takes over, with Election Day being November 8th. So components of this package include about five prongs. Your financial. Again, this is just draft information, so nothing is officially final as of right now. But an overall amount that we're looking at is $140 million for the high school district, with about a $30 per $100,000 assessed value and the estimated tax rate. For the secondary or the elementary school district, we're looking at an overall amount of $68 million, with again about a $30 per $100,000 assessed value. Again, that's assessed value, not your market value for home. Also included in the resolution, this is the whole package itself, is the project list. This is going to be a really important part in your review process. Again, you take the time to look over it. You want to make sure it is accurate. It's a balance between covering our legal basis, but also being specific enough that the community is voting, they know what they're voting on, but also being general enough that it's not tying the hands of the board as you move forward because things change. But we have the project list that you'll see in the resolution package, the 75-word ballot question, which is very important for a lot of voters. It is the only thing they read, and for all voters, it is the last thing they read. So we are very particular about the wording. We want to make sure that there's enough description, but as all of you in the education world know, it is a very uncomfortable, long, run-on sentence with a lot of dashes and a question mark at the end. But that is the way they are written. We also have our legal considerations, which is the overall resolution, all of the whereases that you see in that resolution. And then again, all of this brought together with community alignment, the poll, the master planning that has been done, the community engagement, all bringing that package together that we present to you to vote on, to place on the ballot, and then eventually, should you choose to move forward, to the voters to make the final decision. So our first proposed ballot question, this is for the elementary school. I'll read it quickly, but I won't spend a ton of time on it. To repair, upgrade neighborhood elementary school classrooms and facilities, including deteriorated roofs, plumbing and electrical systems, remove hazardous materials, acquire, renovate, construct, equip classrooms, facilities, technology infrastructure, to support programs in reading, math, science, arts, and technology, improve school safety, security, and replace outdated portables with modern classrooms, shall Santa Cruz City Elementary School District issue $65 million in bonds at legal interest rates with independent citizens' oversight, annual audits, and all funds dedicated locally to Santa Cruz Elementary Schools. So again, this is that combination that covers a general idea of what the money will be spent on, but also our legal requirements as well as the accountability requirements which your community has said it wants to know about. Any questions while we're on that before I move on to the next one? Okay. Second ballot question is your high school district measure to upgrade local middle and high school classrooms, science labs, career training facilities, and technology infrastructure to support student achievement in math, science, engineering, English, social studies, visual/performing arts, technology, and skilled trades, acquire, renovate, construct, equip classrooms, sites, facilities, and improve school safety, security, and disabled access, shall Santa Cruz City High School District issue $135 million in bonds at legal interest rates with independent citizens' oversight, annual audits, and all funds benefiting local middle high schools. Again, this is not officially final. This is our best recommendation at this time, and it's not supposed to encompass every single project that will be done with the bond money. It's a general idea to give your voters as much information as possible. The full resolution is included in the ballot for them to read. Along with that project list, which I have a brief example there, but again, you have that in your board package, so that's a very important piece of the resolution. It lists out the general projects that will be accomplished with the bond money should it pass, as well as all of the legal language that is required by law. Following that, you also have the full resolution, which includes the conditions, provisions, the ballot question, the project list itself, the tax rate statement, and the Prop 39 requirements, which are those community or citizens advisory committee, the annual audits, and so forth, are all included in the language of the full resolution. And then just a reminder before we open it up to questions, once the measure has been filed, should the board choose to move forward, the district can and should provide information, factual information to the public on the ballot measures, but the district cannot spend resources to advocate up or down on behalf of the ballot measures. And paid employees of the district may advocate for or against, but they must do it on their own time, their own volunteer time, not on district time. All right, questions? Again, this is just an early preview of what you have in your packet. This is not the last time you'll be hearing from us and have the opportunity to ask questions.
Questions from the board? Sheila.
Okay, now I'm not sure if this is the right time to ask this, but I've been getting a lot of questions about where in this process does the community have input, when do we have input, and I want to check and see if I have this basically right, which is that we're going to vote whether or not we want to put the bond on the ballot, and then the facilities plan that a whole committee has spent a lot of time working on will be presented to the board. And at that point, we will have input as to whether we agree with what matches those. In other words, those statements are really huge and not vague exactly, but like kind of like the whole world. and so that'll be the more specific plan that aligns itself with our bond proposal. And at that point, there's time for everybody to bring in their opinions and their questions and suggestions. And then is it true that, am I going someplace I shouldn't be going? Is it true that then it's after the bond? If we get the bond, then there's still another time in which there's a discussion about how we proceed?
So in terms of multiple parts, one, the board is the legal entity that puts the measure on the ballot. It's the voters that make the final decision. I will let Chris and Jim talk in a moment about the extensive process of community engagement. In terms of input, we welcome that. If you have things when you're reading the resolution in your board packet that you'd like to share with Chris and Jim as we move forward, we can definitely do that as well on that day. But we do want to hear from you in the preceding weeks that are coming up leading to that July 27th meeting. But there will be more time to have further discussion and make sure we capture that these are drafts and recommendations based on all of the work that's been done in the early master planning, and the project list itself is general enough that it leaves room for the board to make decisions as you move forward. The voters do not vote on the timing in terms of you're not limited to specific dates we're doing each of these projects. What they are voting on is the project list itself. So you do want the project list to include things you will be doing with that bond funds. So it will include those. That's why it's left general enough. Legal will be at the next meeting to also answer further questions on that as well. But it has to be general enough specific enough that when your Citizens Oversight Committee is saying, was that included in our project list? Can we use the bond funds just on that? They can accurately look through the resolution and say, yes, it's included in our project list. But it's general enough that you also are not, your hands are not tied, so that you're able to do the facility in the way you know is needed at the time when you progress. So they're not voting on a timeline, but they are voting on the project list. So it does need to be specific enough, but also it's a legal balance of general. Chris?
So it's inevitable when you're working on old buildings that there are going to be changes in your plans, because you're going to identify problems and needs that you didn't necessarily see before you got behind the walls or under the ground. And we all know that. And so the project list has to cover the whole scope, and the facilities master planning process establishes the priorities and the needs. So the needs, we clearly identified needs. We've identified more needs than we'll be able to meet. So the facility master plan establishes the priorities, and the master plan will be finalized and brought to the board in August. Can we continue to take input along the way? Absolutely. And can we adjust plans based on the within the scope of what we approve? Yes. So we may start, you know, we may start a project at a school site, identify a significant need, and adjust priorities based on that identified new need. Does that make sense to you,
yeah.
Sheila?
Am I correct in thinking that it's not a school by school plan, but rather a priorities across the district plan?
No, we have a school by school plan. Yes.
And we're going to do it that way? That's what I mean. Is it like one school and then on to another school?
So what we're going to stage projects, mm-hmm. and we'll probably focus on individual schools to start. We're not going to be working on all 10 buildings simultaneously. There aren't enough contractors or subcontractors to do that. And if we couldn't manage that in a prudent or responsible way with our staffing footprint, because we want to make sure that we use these dollars well, manage and oversee these projects very well. And so we have to be strategic and thoughtful. So this is going to be work done over a 10 years time.
Right.
Yeah, you won't receive the full $165 million all at once. It will be issued out, as Chris had mentioned, as needed, and to fulfill the projects with the staff time and management and having the architects available. So it will be issued broken up. And that, again, is not voted on by the voters. They just vote on the amount and the project list, which is extensive input from your community. A lot of what you're seeing in that resolution is a combination of what the facilities master plan and all the conversations that the district's team has had. Is telling the community and the district what it knows it wants, and the poll itself gave a very good reflection of what the community has said it wants to see included in this package. So it's a combination of that. You've probably heard us say before, the sweet spot, what the district knows it needs and what the community has said it's willing to support this resolution this time is that middle ground of knowing what your most critical needs are.
Jeremy?
If you look at our 2016-17 budget for board adoption, you'll note that 13% of routine maintenance is paid for out of general fund monies. We call this routine maintenance augmentation, and it totals just slightly under $2 million. Can we expect that number of routine maintenance augmentation, some would call it encroachment, into general fund to decrease with the passage of a bond? In short, I think I've asked the question. Thank you.
I will actually direct that question to Jim.
Yeah, part of the process is the direction from the state, where we as a district now must continue to move forward, set aside 3% of our expenditures in a routine restricted maintenance account. So during the height of the economic crisis, that percentage was reduced to 1% to offset increased general expenses. So when you look at an augmentation, it was the piece of the 1% difference in the actual expenses. As we modernize facilities, we still will have to set aside 3% of the expenditure budgets for our routine restricted maintenance. But I think that one bond that's going to be our maintenance employees. Salaries are specifically set up for maintenance of our buildings. But what it will do is, yes, reduce our footprint on buildings that have been modernized through the bonding process.
So we can expect some reduction, but not substantial.
Correct.
Thank you. Too bad. Yeah. I was hoping.
There's a mandate from the state.
The latter rather than the former.
And we've got to keep them up.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Dee Dee.
So I'm not sure if this is a question for you. It may not be, but I'm wondering where I can find the bond project list.
In the resolution.
I see it in my board book.
It's in the resolution.
It's in the resolution, yes. So the resolution, you see the resolution in your board book, is, let's see.
Exhibit B3.
B3, yeah. Thank you.
Is it not in the PowerPoint slides?
No, not in my PowerPoint. It's in the larger booklet. It's called District Draft, or Discussion Draft Resolution Number Blank at the time. Looks like this.
On your board packet.
In your board packet.
Yeah.
And both in 8.1.1.
But if you look at the documents, you see how you can open up documents for that item?
Okay.
Look at the fourth and fifth documents.
The fourth and fifth, those are the resolutions.
And then that's where she's saying the project list is in the resolution.
Correct. And it starts on exhibit B2 and B2 is on to B3. Oh, okay, there are appendices. Ah, got it. Okay. So my question is regarding those project lists. Have those been generated from the assessment research that was done for all the buildings? And that's how that list was generated?
Okay. Yes, what I'll do is the language similar to what Ms. Clifford referred to. It's general, yet specific. Specific to the needs that we've done in this research over the past 10 to 12 months, that fits within the language for the resolution itself to meet the projects that we currently see, as Superintendent Monroe referred to, on the surface. You know, once you dig into the walls, the infrastructure, the pipes, et cetera, but it still incorporates that language, which seems to be, as Member Coonerty mentioned, general, but yet still specific to the needs of our district.
Okay, thank you.
Patty?
If I am to understand it right, there may possibly be a state bond for schools in the fall. And so this will, again, create the thought, or I'm looking at it, and to best educate the community to what a Santa Cruz City Schools bond will offer for us and what a state bond may offer for us should they both pass, and what is the importance to have one to the other.
So a state bond requires a match from a school district. And you also have to have shovel-ready projects already and be in the queue at the state level to get them. So there are already projects in line waiting for those dollars, and there won't be enough dollars for all of those projects. We think we might be able to get about $6 million in matching dollars if we're able to pass a bond based on projects we know that we have and we could have ready to be in line if that other state measure were to pass. But there are a lot of requirements attached to that state measure, and there's incredible demand across the state.
So just to follow up to that, it would be in our best interest to be prepared through, so this bond measure, should we move forward with it and should we be able to pass it, would put us in best position to obtain those dollars, possibly.
Right. We're prepared that if we were to have the matching dollars, what projects we have that would be eligible and could be submitted for approval.
Right. It makes you eligible. You're not necessarily automatically going to have matching funds, because without it, you would not be eligible.
Sheila.
Okay. If I'm the last person, I have two questions.
Dee Dee has one.
Oh, Dee Dee has one? Okay. So I'll just ask one. So is that, I guess this would be for Jim or Chris, is that what it's talking about when it says, I just lost it, that in order to meet the identified facility needs, the district intends to complete projects using a combination of funding sources? These may be joint use funds, development impact funds, state funds. So in other words, once we begin on these projects, we have to use the bond money exactly like we say we're going to use it, but we have the freedom to use other money that can come from other sources in order to build on what we have. Is that what that's saying?
So we're able to bring in matching dollars for state programs. Yes, that's what that's saying.
Okay.
Do you have more to add to that?
Okay.
The spirit of those dollars would come from the bond itself, because there really are no additional funds unless we decided to use our Fund 21 dollars as part of a match. But those are already set up for emergency repairs at the present time.
Dee Dee?
So my understanding is that the assessment came up with a need amount of around $300 million, correct? And if we move forward with the bonds and we're successful, we would gain about $200 million. So there's $100 million deficit in terms of trying to meet all those needs. How does that break down, that $300 million? How does that break down across the elementary campuses versus the secondary campuses?
So there was over $100 million in need identified on the elementary campuses. With 101, Joan, do you remember exactly?
It's a little over $100 million.
It's a little over $100 million identified in the elementary. We'd be eligible potentially for $68 million in the elementary. So we're going to have, no matter what we do, if a bond were passed, we have to have clear priorities.
Is the steering committee generating those priorities, or is that something that the board would be engaged in at some point?
So the steering committee is using all the survey data, all the input data from the community meetings, all the input data from all the faculty meetings. All of those pieces, along with the architect study, are being used by the steering committee to establish priorities. And yes, ultimately, the board weighs in and makes the final decision.
Sheila.
Okay, I can tell that Dee Dee and I both are getting questions from having heard so much from the community. So I just want to go back one more time to that, the how the process will proceed in terms of need versus schools, because there's going, I know there's some concern about where will natural bridges fit in that, but also in the schools in general, are we going to repair infrastructure or roofs first and then move on? Are we going to decide that with each school? Is that what the board's going to do? Are we going to make the decision as to, well, our greatest need at a particular school is this, or our greatest need in the district is roofs? That I'm trying to understand that part of it.
Well, you look at the priorities that were established with our expert advice from the architects.
So they're going to be giving it to us in a list that goes, this is the most urgent down.
Jim, how is it crafted?
They're going to present a comprehensive facility master plan that will encompass literally almost every site within the district. What was done through the study, as Superintendent Monroe referred to, and through the work of the steering committee, they've indicated, or through the discussion of saying, here's the recommended priority from this group of individuals, taking all this information into place. So literally with every other project or like the budget, we make a recommendation to you to adopt, to approve. The board takes the final action of what that plan will be based upon the information that's presented next to you in August as part of the comprehensive facility master plan.
So I guess a follow-up to that is, if there were, in August, if we look at that list and then we say, well, the community wants to have more say in this, or we need to go back and figure out whether that's the right direction to go, do we have to decide in August, or can we say, we can tell you generally where we're going to go, but we want to look into the community more?
They're going to provide the plan of what these recommendations are. You're going to accept the plan to say, here's the overall picture. What you're going to do each site is probably going to change based upon, one, first and foremost, if the bond passes.
Yeah.
If there is no bond,
there
is no master plan.
Right.
We're purely in a reactive maintenance mode,
right.
Period. That's it.
Right.
But you have established what the priorities are if for some reason we need to determine to go out on a later date. So the absolute decision will come from the board based upon all the information that's presented and what you feel as a board is the priority for the district, depending upon the type of projects. I can tell you there's been an extensive process with the committees to gather as much information as possible to come up with these pieces that will prioritize some of these pieces. You know, we heard loud and clear, a lot of people, is what can we do to minimize the imprint or footprint of portable buildings while creating permanent structures, which has a positive effect on place mix. You'll probably see that as one of them. Part of it will be the American with Disability Act requirements that we must do once we put a shovel in the ground. There's no ends, ifs, or buts from the Department, Division of State Architect, or State Architect itself. Those will have to be done, and those costs have all been calculated to be presented to you also.
And the way I'm conceiving it is we have this master plan now, mm-hmm. And that's our master plan. Even when we run out of bond money, it's still our plan for any future money we get.
Correct.
So we want to be really sure of what we're doing at this point. Okay.
Correct.
And just by the nature of things, things will evolve. Pipes will break, things will happen, things will evolve over time.
And needs will change.
Yes.
Exactly. And that's why you see in the project list, it's not school site by school site. All schools are included, but the project list is a more general list, knowing that exactly as Superintendent Monroe said, you'll know as a board, your voters will not know that a pipe broke at this school, and that takes priority over, you know, another school that has great plumbing. So that will take priority, and you get to make those decisions.
That's another district.
that's just the example of it. It never happened. You as the board have those decisions. The project list itself is just that those projects are what we know are the most critical need out of that, you know, $300 million in need, can't do it all. So these are our top priorities based on the actual facilities master plan, community input, and again, the community input through the polling as well.
Didi?
I think this is a quick question. The small schools campus is included in the elementary side of the house, and yet it has a secondary program. So why is that, or how does that work?
It has K-12 programs there. Mm-hmm. The majority of the kids there on a daily basis are elementary. But because we have buildings that are deeded to the elementary district and buildings that are deeded to the secondary district, and that's how it's determined.
Sheila.
Just the last small question.
Okay.
So when community members come to me and say, will I still be able to have say? I'm going on vacation. I'll be gone in August. When I come back, will I be able to have time to say my input?
Always.
Yes, and always. Yes, over time. We have to...
People always have input. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, people always have input on our processes. They're, you know, are they going to have input on your decision to make, to go up for a bond or not? If they're not there to weigh in, or they haven't emailed you before then, or haven't communicated? No, because at that point, that decision is made. But do they always have input on our processes and, you know, adjusting needs, identifying needs, helping us identify needs that may not have been identified yet? That's always absolutely a possibility and a ways to adjust or improve the plan as we go. Because we're about continuous improvement. This is a point in time that we're saying these are the needs and priorities at this point in time. If more information comes to inform the process, can that continue to inform the process? Absolutely, and it should.
Okay.
Correct. Filing deadline is August 12th. Should you choose to move forward and be on the November 8th ballot, then exactly as Superintendent Monroe said, the projects that are listed there, they can continue to have input of, you know, as you're planning and making decisions on what are the most critical that need to be happening first. They're all part of that process, as always.
That's a good segue to public comment. There are members of the public who would like to comment.
This is working. I'm just going to talk loudly. If you can't hear me, let me know, please. My name's Janice Swan. So it is true, public will have input, because if this isn't brought forward in a way that is open and accessible to public, the input will be to vote this down. And I don't want to see that happen, because I'm on those campuses and I see what a mess they are and I know they need help. And so I have a question about the project list. Do you actually have a project list now accessible to you that is public that we can see? Or is that something that will happen for the next meeting?
Do you want to go ahead and...
Yeah, if you could answer that, it will affect what I say. Because if you don't have that project list, it would be helpful to get that out to the public now. That would be something that people need to see. And for my information, I know most of you haven't, other than Patty Three, who was on the steering committee, most of you have not heard from the steering committee. And it's a little backwards to have a steering committee give you input after you make this decision and after you have to accept the project list, because you haven't been allowed to discuss it. So I think that's a little backwards. My question is, are you going to accept the ad hoc recommendations? You talk about the facility master plan, but there's been a process, ad hoc committee, steering committee. So are we down here, or are we still questioning the ad hoc recommendations. They haven't been voted on. We don't know what you think about them other than your comments. So how does that fit in? Where is the public process? Will it be that those will be accepted and then the next thing will be the master plan will be given and then the public will land on the project list? I'm just frustrated because I'm not clear about what your process is and I'm not sure you're clear. The one thing I want you to understand is that the allocations were made by the subcommittee, which was the architect and the board trustee, about how to allocate the money. The money is allocated on a per student basis, meaning that the schools that have more students get a bigger allocation. It was brought up repeatedly in the two meetings that I went to that is not the best way to allocate money. There might be a school that has more need. There might be a school that has serious problems with infrastructure. You might want to look at that to allocate money. There was no conversation about that. It was, this is our starting point, and this is where we're going forward. Now I'm finding out this is actually the project list that you will be voting on. It sounds like you will have that assumption in your project list. You will not have the ability to discuss if you want to change that or not. And I don't know if you want to comment on that.
I'll just say one project list is absolutely a draft, and it's not a final version by any means.
And but it'll be a final version in August. Is that clear?
Yes.
Okay. So that is something to take
should
into account.
In July 27th, yes. Should the board choose to move forward?
Should, yeah. So that's something I want you to look at. I think that there are schools like Harbor High that are in huge need. Basic need that you things that you have. And the other thing that happened during the, I'm just going to continue for a second, during the steering committee was Harbor High had a coach who happened to be there, who mentioned that on the project list there didn't happen to be anything about a pool. And so he brought it up, it was discussed, everyone thought it was a good idea. It changed the project list because public was there to input. It will change your project list if you get the public involved, and you won't pass the bond without getting the public involved.
Okay. Any other comments?
I'm Jim Larson. I served on the bond oversight committee for the last bond, and I served for 12 years on that particular committee. And I want to assure the board that there were very similar circumstances. We were very fortunate because we had a whole lot of priorities before each school, and because the state the next year. Allocated some funds for further development, we were able to satisfy those priorities and extend the project all the way through. And I think we need to think about this as trusting people and especially the advisory committee to make wise decisions. We had the same concerns that you have. We thought for sure that we were going to have all kinds of extra expenses for Santa Cruz High School, but as it turned out, it was Brent Sifordi Elementary and Brent Sifordi Middle School that we had the significant problems. And I just want you to know that this is a leap of faith. But you need to do this for the kids. And the only other thing that I would ask is, I'm not even sure whether we would get off the bonds that we had 8 years ago. Can you tell me if we're all paid up?
At this time, no.
Well, how much do we owe?
I haven't had that. So it was part of our April presentation.
Okay.
I mean, I can say that presentation.
So anyhow, I think this would be a very good thing for our kids and for the future prosperity for this particular school district. And as far as natural riches is concerned, I think there's a very easy answer to that. Besides, the sports complex, I think if we move the district office to that facility. Thank you for listening.
Any other comments?
Okay, this is an information item. Is there final comments from the board? Are we done? Go ahead, Claudia.
I just want to thank everyone that spoke tonight. It really does help to hear from the public. Thank you.
Sheila?
I just wanted to clarify that I think I'm clarifying it right. You tell me if I'm wrong, but I began when the district began going from school to school and hearing the presentations of the architect and the and our facilities person, and they were. I have never seen in Santa Cruz City Schools such a professional and detailed job done as to what could be done, and the parents, teachers, whoever came was asked their opinion, what they wanted on the list. So we didn't begin with a list made up by a group of people in a room. We began with the feedback of the schools, the principals, the teachers, the parents. And the reason I got involved was because I found it so fascinating when I realized what they were doing was going from school to school and really trying to figure out what are the things that have to be done and what are the things that could be done that would change the nature of the place. So I just want to be sure that people understand that that's where it started. And some of the community wasn't really tuned in yet. That's true. But there were people who were tuned in and came and offered a lot of good information. So now we're going from that to a list that, from what I can see, when I looked at that list, I thought everything that was said to me during those meetings or was said to the architects, is it in there? Not by specific place, but are the things that need to be done in there? And in looking at it, I was actually quite impressed that everything was in there. And now the next step is going to be us making that more specific as a list of priorities. And I do think we've gotten a lot from the community, and yet we needed to hear more, which we have heard lately. And I too thank you for staying in there and letting us know.
Okay, this is an information item.
Patty.
And I would like to thank you who have come to speak. I would also like to add to, I believe, from the process that I have experienced through this, going back into last year when the architects came, being part of reaching out to the parts of the community. Anybody who asked me about facilities, I sent emails. I sent to all of our sitting supervisors that have students in our district, from Zach Friend all the way to Ryan Coonerty and Bruce McPherson, to please attend, to please send it to their constituents. So the framework has come out of this, and I tend to be more specific in my planning so I can understand where people are asking, where are the specifics, have you decided? But we had to start a conversation somewhere. And along with that, in the conversation, within the committees had stated, and being that I was on the facilities committee, that these are just recommendations for the board. So when Sheila had asked about where will the community engagement come, it's coming right now as you speak to these needs, to things that we didn't realize in a very complicated matter that doesn't give us all the funds we need in order to solve the problems. So I would hope everyone could keep that in mind in benefit of the larger picture, because yes, we do support what we create, but I think that we would all stand aligned to say that the needs are great, and though we may not get our very specific wants in the general picture, I would be happy for most of it. So thank you.
Okay. Go ahead, Dee Dee.
I just want to point out to my colleagues that in looking at the project list, on the elementary side, there is some language around fields. And athletic studies. And it's not, that kind of language is not on the project list for the secondary schools. So it's just, I don't know if that's intentional or if that was left out, but what I'm hearing, that there's been talk about how we're going to address those kinds of facilities needs, like our pools and things like that, that language is not currently, I'm not finding it.
Are you talking about on the list that's going to go on the
Yeah, the project for the key findings.
The bond project list here.
Yeah.
B2 and B1.
8.3.1.
No, you're right.
So I would just add, but when you look at the project list, one, that's a great comment, and we definitely want to make sure we look at that and that everything that we know is on that critical need list or we know might be a potential thing we want to spend the bond money on. We want to, that's part of this process and why we brought it to you as early as we did, so we can start continuing to take from what we had already been doing with the community and the master plan in exactly that. So we can definitely look at that. When you look at the resolution, just so you know, there's some pulled out kind of bullet items, but then there's also that longer kind of bulky paragraphs that cover even more information. So again, thank you for pointing that out. We'll definitely double check that. But please, you know, take a look at that full list when you look at the project list, because there's a lot of things included in there that may not be pulled out like some of the top projects that we know have been voiced to us as critical need.
Okay, thank you, Amanda.
Tonight I bring you back to you our a recommendation to approve our local control and accountability plan. Again, thanks to the board and our stakeholders, our community, for their input in helping us define not only our priorities, but the services that we're going to be bringing to our students next year. Some of them are continuing moving forward, and some of them are new. And the other critical piece of the LCAP is setting the metrics and looking to measure the impact in an ongoing way throughout the year. So we had at our last board meeting an opportunity to review the process, the purpose, and all of the proposed expenditures, and an opportunity also to go out to the public and have a hearing. So tonight I'm bringing this back to you with a recommendation to approve. And from here, we'll be bringing it to the county office, and they'll be going through it as well. I'm meeting with some representatives from our county office on Monday morning. So we're just bringing it back for the final approval and any questions or comments.
Are there any questions from the board? Comments from the public? Okay. The recommendation is to approve the LCAP. Do we have a motion?
Move approval.
Dee Dee?
Second.
Sheila? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Abstained? 7-0.
Thank you.
Thank you, Angela.
Thank you very much, Angela.
Yeah, this is a huge one.
Very nice. 8.3.3, approve the 2016-2017 budget.
And I'm going to follow Angela's lead all night long, and even on June 30th, which means we're both exiting. but the budget itself, again, what comes after the adoption of the LCAP, because a lot of the information pieces that Angela referred to as part of the local control accountability plan are also included in the changes of the budget adoption. So, similarly following that focus, we're bringing forward to you the actual budget for budget adoption for the board adoption, which is coming forward tonight, with, again, I think a recent comment regarding the facility process was the constant change and the fluidity of the process. And we do that consistently on the budget. Whether it's right now finishing out the 15-16 estimated actuals, which we're only making changes in the last week with special ed piece that we're talking about at the last meeting, the deferred maintenance and facility expenses. So we continue to update that piece, which has a direct effect on the totals being carried forward for the 2016-17 year. So again, I'll go through this very, very quickly with just a couple of minor changes. And again, also some requests for information that came from last week's meeting to be presented also. Again, I'm not going to go over each line by line, but again, we talked about the key elements, the preliminary budget that we presented, and it's almost as completely preliminary. We're still waiting for the final adopted budget from the state of California itself. And those sessions will begin coming to the districts over the next couple of weeks and months from our vendor partners. What are the key elements? Again, we talked about how the budget is positive, but growth has slowed to a much slower rate. One-time monies, again, seems to be the focus of Governor Brown and the current legislature. And for us, a significant challenge are the increased expenses to the district that have been passed on to us from the current legislature. Again, we talked about the CalSTRS rates, CalPERS rates for those significant pieces, which are leading to increases to us as a district of anywhere from $1 to $1.2 million annually based upon salaries within our district. And those were passed on to us again because these percentage changes from the legislature. Again, we talked about the fact there's no cost of living adjustment for the 16-17 budget year, so the base grants for funding levels remain the same, as well as the fact that we are a district that does not receive any concentration grants because of our percentage of free and reduced percentages. And again, we talked about some of the significant portions that we've shared regarding the projected revenues for the different measures from the four parcel taxes, which have been significant and critical to the success of Santa Cruz City Schools. Some of the key assumptions that were used in conjunction with discussion with the County Office of Ed, which has the first level of approval after your adoption. Again, we talked about the description of the parcel tax funding, what's broken out for the support that have been approved by the voters of Santa Cruz County, and the effect on the budget. And we continue to update this piece, which is where we're at. These are extremely current up to the changes we made with the post, our last week's presentation, of exactly the effect of all the changes in PERS and STIRS, which have increased the same positions that we had that will exceed the amount of revenue we pull in, but we have not decreased those percentages of positions within the district. Those have been maintained, so it requires an augmentation to the parcel taxes from the general fund to maintain those positions. And we have broken out by each measure, I, J, of course, P, which is the current renewal, as well as Measure O, which is the most recent secondary parcel tax that was passed by the voters, which have a significant impact to the program that we are well aware. So again, we talk about the highlights or some of our changes that we've had and what comes into play for us as a district. And again, this is where we made some significant or some changes from the estimated actuals just from last week. We made some adjustments again for special ed expenditures, deferred maintenance expenditures that have come in, and moved them some to a Fund 14 outside of the general fund. We're projected right now to finish up 15-16 about a 90% reserve, and 16-17 we're currently stated to be about 6.73, again, pending the current adoption of the budget, which of course will be as subject to change as soon as tomorrow. Again, this is just again graph showing the breakout of our unrestricted expenditures, breaking out between the key expenditure option codes. This talks about the augmentation, and of the augmentations that come out of this dollar amount, it's broken out between special ed and the routine maintenance, which we talked about earlier. Remember showing this question. And the assumptions that we're using for the multi-year projection. Again, we must show where we're going to be, not just for this year, but 3 years out post that time. The budget we're asking for adoption tonight is for 2016-17. So we must show what our expenditure patterns are projected to be for 17-18 and 18-19. And what the appropriate assumptions that align it based upon the current projection from school services and other underwriters. So this is our most recent up-to-date multi-year projection from our estimated actuals, which we're now showing a slight decrease down a little over 8%. We're still looking at about 6.3 in 16-17, 17-18 above, just below 4%, and right now in 18-19, we dropped a little bit to the 1% to incorporate some of those new expenditures. And this is where in last week's discussion we talked about, having already discussed with the County Office of Ed, they expect to see these numbers coming in from us, and what they're going to be anxious to see is what occurs with us during the next part, which is closing the books for the 15-16 school year. We begin to get information from the county itself regarding the tax revenue that's starting to come in, what the effect that will be on the district, and what dollars will continue to fall towards the carry-forward balance. Again, this talks about, again, the state recommends you have to have 3%, but we must do that over a three-year period. So what are some dollars we may have to earmark as these expenditures go down, and there may be some planned deficit spending? And these are some items that we talked about in the last meeting. We were asked to take a look at recommended position changes, what the cost would be, and per the board policy that was adopted by the board, what would that effect be on the general fund and our current multi-year projection. So we brought in the information of what would it be to add three and a half hour textbook clerks at our secondary sites, which would increase expenses approximately $34,000 if there was three individuals at 3.5 hours. So we'll say one per comprehensive high school site. Okay. Just to give you an idea, that averages about $11,000 to $12,000 for a 3.5 hour position to assist us in the piece of coordinating that piece. I then followed up with phone calls to each site administrator to figure out what was the dollar amount that was being projected at lost dollars or book costs. And it averages probably anywhere from some sites it was as high as in the 20,000s. It seemed to be across the three comprehensive sites to be averaging about $16,000 based upon the number of books that were lost. The question would be, what would be the actual amount that we would recoup with the addition of this? Would it be dollar for dollar? Would it not? We've never been in that position before. I don't have that history. But that gives you a barometer of how to measure, which you asked us to provide for you also. So I spoke personally to each administrator beside. I know they've been working with some other site librarians to get some of this figured to see what that piece was costing, whatever it would be. So this is brought forward. Then, of course, we add on in case, you know, if you had an 8-hour position, what would it be with some of the cost of health care? And we also present those to you for if these were additional positions that were hired. The key component, based upon our third year out, which I think you heard me mention last week, was any expense we tend to increase based upon projected budget, what would you look to decrease in some other program that's currently existing, just because of the fact the way that we are funded with our other increased expenses. So the next slide shows you what this effect would be. We took the same NYP, which is a couple of slides before. We then just added in that $35,000 per cost beginning with next year, and you'll see that it'll drive it down a little bit, just above 6% in 16-17, drops it down to 3.61, and the current 18-19 just takes us to 0.27.
I don't have that slide.
No, I don't either.
That slide wasn't in the board book.
Is that one of the ones?
Okay. Is that it up there?
I left you a new presentation here. For those of you who are reading your electronic books.
It didn't get put on the. It didn't get put on WordPad.
Oh,
it's
on
WordPad.
It's right there. It's an additional item, I believe.
Yeah.
It says revised.
It says revised.
It's on WordPad, revised as up to date. Yeah. And for those of you not using electronic, I gave you over.
I use electronic, but I get it from the website.
So it takes us back down to 0.27 because you have 3 years of expenses of $35,000 per year. Okay. So this is the request that you've asked us to do on the policy, so we present the position to you for the increase of the textbook clerk. Okay. So, again, what's on the horizon? Tonight we reviewed and just recently adopted the local control accountability plan. What happens now is that we ask you to adopt the current budget, which again is a very fluid, and we'll begin to make adjustments, you know, as soon as tomorrow with the direction. We'll continue to revise revenue projections. We'll continue to revise expenses. We'll revise the budget. Sacramento debate down. We haven't shared all of the changes that are coming through with the trailer bills. And we begin the year-end closing. We really have begun by trying to update as many estimated actuals as possible. But we begin the actual closure continuing of July 1, utilizing the digital schools as our current financial system. Staff recommends the adoption of the current budget, knowing that, again, it's a very fluid process with any other direction from the board. And, of course, I like this one so much I didn't change it, but Dr. Seuss, who's known to be quite a brilliant individual, think left and think right and think low and think high. For the things you can think of, if only you try. And I wish I had a little bit rosier picture. The one thing I've tried to do in the time that I've been here is try to present based upon the current information that I have. How about that?
Patty.
Thank you, Allison. Jim, so when I'm looking at the recommended position changes, I'm talking about the textbooks clerk because that was the only augmentation brought forward from last meetings. Am I to understand in your particular slide here that there would be an increase of $143,000 or that is the total projected cost for three full-time?
On the one, we go back to it. For a textbook clerk, for three, at 3.5 hours, the increased cost for 1 year would be just under $35,000.
So
that for 1 year.
Because it's
for
not benefit.
For 1 year. So if you increase one at 8 hours and they purchase a low-cost, potential low-cost health plan, that would be $90,000 for one.
this is in addition to what we've already been paying for, so this is not taking into account the already existing librarians who've been doing this work. This is just creating the new position.
New position.
Okay, that's, I'm sorry, I wanted to be clear on that because I know that there has been a lot of, within the job description, confusion on my part. And with that, we believe that on average, the three comprehensive high schools lose about $16,000 in non-returned books. Not that I'm saying that it's dollar for dollar that would be captured, that by having spending for new clerks would be recapturing all that. Do we antiquate out books as we're changing for those books, or these library books and not just...
It's textbooks.
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 Okay.
So if we recuperated every single one, I mean, that'd be a projection.
Okay, thank you.
I have my light on, so I'm going to call on myself. I just wanted to point out and talk to the board about the issue that it wasn't just about lost textbooks. It's also, this has been brought to the board four times around the issue of who is managing the textbooks and the fact that our certificated librarians who are credentialed are using a good proportion of their time to monitor textbooks. It means that it's an interesting use of a credentialed teacher's time. It was brought up last year at this time with Joyce Smith's letter of resignation from the PTOC. It was brought again by the librarians. It was brought again by PTOC. So I think that this is a complicated issue because it's tangled with the issue around librarians. Mm-hmm. So I just think that we need to take that into account as well, that it is, it's more than just the loss of textbook. It's also that at some of our schools, the librarians are managing the textbooks. And I would like to propose that problem needs to be solved. Sheila and then Dee Dee.
Well, Allison said some of what I was going to say, where this has been an ongoing issue with PTOC, and they've brought it to us many times. I think that it has affected the librarian's ability to do the rest of the library job. And we used to have them. We used to have textbook clerks. So I feel that this is one of those things that we should be looking at now having again. I want to clarify something, Jim. That the $34,000 at the 3.5 hours is for one clerk or for three?
Three.
It's for all three. So because it sounded, it sounds like too little for three but too much for one. So I wanted to make sure I was right. And I guess the other comment I want to make is I have a very difficult time with deciding to have somebody for 3.5 hours because it means they don't have benefits and it's cheaper for us. And I know that we are not overflowing with money right now. But we do make decisions about teachers and administrative staff that we don't blink at the amount we have to pay for benefits. And so I'm having a hard time with this. I had a mother who worked as a teacher's aide at 3.99 hours. She worked 6 hours a day. She got paid for 3.99 without benefits. And I swear, it's causing me to have acid indigestion. So one of my questions is in this, and this is for all the board, not, you know, and the administration, but because I know that we're in kind of a difficult financial place right now, we have a lot of things on our plate, I might say, okay, I can see that we may have to go for 3.5, but I would really like us also to have a ongoing consideration and discussion that we don't keep doing that, especially to our classified staff that is always underpaid. But that we think about if we're going to make a decision that we need something, just like we do when we need a coach or we need a teacher trainer, we need them, we need a new administrative position. We decide we need it, and then we figure out how we can get the money to do it. We don't say, well, we can do it without giving them health benefits. So I have a problem with this that I want to at least bring up in this discussion.
Didi.
I have a question, and I think it's for you, Jim. So the parcel tax, portions of the parcel tax funding are allocated towards supporting our libraries, but it's a different amount for the elementaries versus the secondaries, correct?
Well, the amount is normally tied to individuals, and based upon experience, there'll be different dollar amounts tied to the individuals.
No, that's not what I'm saying. The total amount that's allocated to our elementary schools for library services is greater than our total amount that is allocated towards our secondary schools, and it's because they are connected to the parcel taxes, correct?
Right, so we have a K-8 parcel tax that provides certain services in our K-8 schools. Library services, counseling services, and I should have them all in my head right now, but I confuse them sometimes, so I want to say, but that is a K-8 parcel tax. Mm-hmm. The high school parcel tax pays for library services and counseling services also. Mm-hmm. We have larger counseling footprint at the high schools because of the scope of need there is different than at the other grade spans. So it's just been the way that those dollars have been allocated, and it does vary depending on which person is in the position as to what the actual dollars are, but it's supporting library programs and the counseling programs in 9-12.
So I guess my question then is, so Measure I is the high school parcel tax that is supporting library services, and that's it, because Measure O does not include library services.
Correct.
For high schools.
Correct.
Correct. So moving forward, we're going to have decreases in our support for library services. How long are we going to have those Measure I funds available as?
So if we don't renew any of those parcel taxes, that would be a decrease in some services because we'd have less revenue. So it would be a decision by the board about which services would be decreased if we didn't have that revenue.
Pat. Now, this is along the lines of how Sheila is speaking, and for the board to consider. I definitely see that this has come forward for the entire time that I've been on the board. And I do know that for all that don't come forward, we have needs, so I keep that in mind, you know, for the general public who comes just specifically to a trustee as opposed to a public meeting. I think that this is a problem that we should be having this conversation around. And I do want to honor what Sheila said about the hours. I am just wanting to know, is this the best solution to the problem of moving textbooks to our students and back? Meaning, have we explored any other way? And I don't know that it has been or hasn't been, but I do want to put that out there, because what I've always known a solution to be doesn't necessarily mean it's currently the best solution for the money spent. And I just wanted to say that as we consider.
I also have a question, Jim. On the chart, the recommended position changes.
Do we want to address that one first?
Okay, I thought it was a comment.
Is that a comment or was there?
Well, it's something I'd like for the board to be keeping in mind. So it is somewhat of a question if it has been and there has been like absolutely no other solution, or it's the best solution that we know and it has been proven to be that way.
I just say that it's been difficult to find a solution to this problem. And we've been talking about it a lot, about ways to look at this. Anne, what do you want to speak to?
I think we've been talking about, I think our library teachers have also been trying to work out some really creative solutions. And they've been struggling because most of the solutions are revolving around students, they come up with creative ways for students to check out their own books and check them back in. But I think what was missing is that overall oversight. So I have seen some really creative solutions and some great thinking that has been brought to this. And definitely they've been our partners in how do we move forward, how do we do this. But I think what's being shared is that there hasn't been a dedicated person to really oversee all of those solutions.
I had a question about the chart. So, Jim, you said that the 3.5 hours and the total cost of the district at $34,273 was for three part-time textbook clerks. I also wanted to add, and this is kind of another issue, maybe it'll come up, I'll bring it up in the discussion, that we actually have four high schools. So I think that we need to include small schools in this as well. But my question is, the rest of the columns, the low cost, average, high cost, you said was based on one person? So there would be an additional increase of $89,000 if there were one one clerk.
I'd like to remind us, though, there are just over 100 high school students at Christinella versus almost 1,000 students at each of the three comprehensives. Mm-hmm. And the ARC students have their teachers who are their one-on-one teachers check out their books to them.
Sheila, you have a question?
That just blew my mind what you just said. That I'm having trouble too with looking at the benefit charts. So one set of benefits can't be 71,000 because then we wouldn't have an increase of 89,000. I don't get it. We know that it would cost us 34,000 to have three 3.5 textbook clerks.
Those are three sets of benefits. Three sets at the low, three sets at the average, and three sets at the high.
Which would depend on choices of the people who were hired.
Correct.
Okay. But then the 89,757 would suggest that each one would be about 30,000 benefits.
Or classified, correct.
Okay, so that 71,000 is not, because you said it was one, and I thought that meant it actually doesn't add up either way. Now that I think about it,
gross pay.
Oh, that's the gross pay. Okay. Now I'm catching
up. And that reflects the increase in hours from 3.5 to 8, and the benefit increase.
Right. So we don't have control over that range because the employee has that range. Mm-hmm. Okay. And my other question is, this 3.5, we already have library assistants at each school at 3.5 hours? Yes or no?
Media assistants.
Angela, what's the FTE of the media assistants at the high schools?
I think it's just 2.5.
So I have to say that's another time when I get a little crazy. Mm-hmm. Because basically you have people, they're doing slightly different jobs, but they're the same people. And if you were really fair, you'd have one job, give them benefits, they do both jobs. We're splitting it. It's convenient to us, it seems like to me, if we do this. And the other thing I want to say is that we're getting all these new textbooks, so I can see where this has always been a problem, but now it seems like it's more of a problem. So.
Another question, Patty?
Thinking along the lines of the media assistant, we have a personnel commission, and I believe if I read in their minutes, would it be something that, you know, sometimes our job descriptions are antiquated within a couple of years with technology and such, that they may, in the immediate future, look to see what a media assistant / book clerk job could be, knowing with what Sheila said that from our finance department, we may look at numbers as a full-time employee that way, as opposed to having that, of course, it puts some weight on the personnel commission to review it, or the district to make sure we're reviewing it as best needs down the road. Just wanted to put that out in a discussionary form. Sorry, not really a question.
It's okay. Okay, are there, so we'll move from questions to public comment. Are there any?
Hi, I'm Jolene Kimos. I'm the library media teacher at Transport Small Schools, and I actually didn't intend to talk tonight, but a lot has come up for me, and I want to thank the board for their ongoing consideration of this big issue that we're all facing, and I will thank you on behalf of all of us, but I'll speak to what's happening in small schools, because I think there's a little bit of confusion about what happens on our campus. The library supports almost 500 kids. We are open 8:30 to 2 every day, and I'm a 50% employee, and my assistant is at 3.75 hours. And so between the two of us, we rarely overlap, because we're trying to keep, in the interest of equity, our site open regular business hours so that their needs can be met across the board. Although our textbook situation is different at small schools, the varied support that we provide is different but equal to what's happening at the comprehensives, I believe. We wrote a lot of notes. I just want to make clear that we do have 3.75 hour library media assistants at the high schools, including small schools, which is funded by the high school money, and that to extend, as Sheila suggested, those hours to give our assistants a living wage would be much appreciated and would also augment the textbook problem, as assistants could contribute to that. At least that's the case in my side. I want to speak for everybody, because the textbook problem varies between the sites. That would just be my hope. My assistant, I know that at the high school we've lost something like 6 library media assistants in the last year, because every time, or not in the last year, 6 in the last, I forget what this is, but it's crazy. Like in the last 2 years, we've replaced our library media assistants at the high schools repeatedly, and we invest a lot of time and energy training these people, and then they move to the first benefited position that's open. And I know that this situation is not unique in our district, but it is something that we are feeling in an unequal way in our department, because at the middle schools they have full-time library media assistants, and at the elementary schools they have benefited 20 hours per week of library media assistants. So even within our department, as positions open, the high school and small schools assistants are looking at those other jobs and looking at. So thank you again for your consideration. I really appreciate you guys talking about this and considering.
Any other comments?
Your comments are really excellent. I think you hear that besides myself. I appreciate your bringing attention to the benefit positions. The idea was to combine those positions and be the clerks, so we wouldn't lose them. As she was saying, at Soquel High, for the last semester, we didn't have anybody at the library, except the library. Just to give you an idea. They couldn't find it. They wanted to do a 3.5-hour job. It's just not there. They're looking for jobs with benefits. So you're taking that into consideration. It's great. And it would be great to combine those two positions, and the personnel commission is going to be revamping. We'll be looking at those positions. We're going to go for reclassification studies, so we'll be interested. Thank you.
Any other comments?
As a member of the Parcel Tax Oversight Committee, I want you to know that this was the one unanimous vote we had. Elaine brought it to you before, and it was something that we discussed for a very long time, and I would support Jolene's idea of including the, making the aid position a benefit position. That would be a fair thing to do. But if you understand that the public is bringing money to you, to our district, to supplement our libraries, then we want the money to be spent well. We expect the district to put money in too to keep those programs going. It's a partnership, and we want you to make sure that the library media teachers are really able to teach, because that's what they're there for.
Okay.
Any other comments?
Board discussion. Jeremy.
This is financial, but might affect how I think about the issue, so I'd like to ask it now. Your assumption at the last meeting, Jim, was that on the multi-year projection assumption was that the net property taxes above LCFF would increase by 2%. But what I see in 16-17 is 828,000, and 17-18 is 1.9. As we discussed, you said 190,000 for 1%, and we'll call it 2%. We'll call it 200,000 for 1%. That's over a 5% increase. So I'm looking at an additional 600,000 that you're now budgeting into our multi-year projection that you weren't just 1 week ago, or am I mistaken?
No.
If you could explain, thank you so much.
For the taxes itself,
I'm on your multi-year projection assumption, revenue highlights, net prop taxes above the LCFF 2000.
Our assumption still is 2% that we're using for our district as a whole.
But yet, follow-up question if you don't mind so much, but yet you're jumping from 828K to 1.9, which is over a $1 million jump, and so that's a 5% increase.
Is the fair share reduction not on there?
No, we're, fair share reduction is the line below. That's okay. Going to remain the same.
Yeah, okay.
Maybe I'm misreading something. I'd love a clarification.
I'm sorry. Which one are you on?
I'm on, page 8, and I'm on your multi-year projection assumptions, if we could find that.
Past the pie of special ed and routine maintenance.
Oh, there it is. Okay, yeah.
Past the pie of special ed.
Keep going.
Okay, so then what?
Well, we're not there yet.
One needs to have some patience.
There we go. Now
one
almost there. There we go.
There you go. All right, so you see COLA and 0% project.
Right.
Yeah, okay. Then you see gap funding rate, and of course that's reducing because the gap's getting smaller and smaller. Mm-hmm. EPA entitlement, and then you see net prop taxes above LCFF in for 16-17, 828, but then it jumps 17-18 to 1.9. Mm-hmm. That's a 5% jump.
That's just showing the net property taxes overall for the district. Recall that if there's any increase in the secondary portion, it reduces the state aid. So this is our current assumption based upon the property taxes. That will also have a negative effect on the secondary side, so it's not going to increase it on that calculation. Right now, we are just increasing 2% on the elementary side and 2% on the secondary side, which has a different effect on the calculating factor for the local control funding formula.
So that has elementary and secondary property taxes in it?
Combined.
Right.
Yes.
So we're just showing what the current projection will be for those property taxes that are going to affect the calculation on the elementary side differently than what's going to affect the calculation on the secondary.
So once again, I've gotten my hopes high.
Yes.
Only to be dashed.
I mean, I wish I could pull out the money out of the pocket.
Only to be dashed against the rocks of reality.
Yes.
Thank you.
The current funding is simply is this. We have the current projections that were provided to you. And as my outgoing last budget presentation, I wish it was stronger. I mean, the key component that affects us are the increased costs being passed on to us from the state. And
we understand STRS and PERS.
Right.
We're talking about increasing property taxes for elementary versus basic aid districts. And we do get to keep those.
So you're
still projecting 2%.
2%.
And that's built in.
And we'll get that updated in September.
Okay.
So the current projection right now for year 3 is a little over under 1%. Will it come in higher? I'd be lying if I said no. Okay. But we're trying to get the best projection that we can with the information we have right now. That was the commitment I made, you know, to you 16 months ago. So based upon that, any expense that we increase will potentially affect the current program in place. I mean, and I go back to that first thing I recall. We can do anything you direct us to do. We just can't do everything that we would like to do. And we're just not funded as the district 20 miles south of us is. That's just our challenge.
Sheila.
I do hear you saying that, Jim, because I know that there have been times when we've made decisions here, and then people in the public have said, wait a minute, but we have needs too, and we didn't come and ask for anything. You know, so I think we always have to worry about that, that there are everyone, like, for instance, the band needs a silver band, and they're also a parcel tax, you know, and would they feel that libraries don't need it more than they do? But what I'm basically going to say is I intend to make a motion, and I had come to feel that given our budget situation and the bottom line, that I would make a motion for the textbook clerks at the 3.5 hours. However, I would really like, my inclination right now is to try for a motion for okay, I don't know exactly how to do this. I guess it would it be full time? I would like to be able to I don't know that I can do that, it's too complicated. I would put together the library clerks and the textbook clerks if I could, and therefore we would have a full time person, but I'm not sure that I can do that right now. But I would like somebody to explain to me why, if middle schools have full-time library aides, why I shouldn't make a motion for full-time textbook clerks. I'd like to know if there's an explanation that before I make my motion.
And we're still in discussion, so you'll hold the motion until we're
right.
finished with
yes.
the discussion.
I just want to.
But you're thinking out loud.
I'm thinking out loud.
Okay.
And wanting to know if there's something I'm missing here. Other than the fact that we don't have much money, which I know.
Mm-hmm. Jeremy.
I have a suggestion. As there is the possibility that our elementary property taxes will come in above 2%, and there is the possibility that we'll know about this in September, I would suggest that we hold off on this issue for now and continue with status quo, and set this as an agenda item for a presentation from the appropriate district office person, whether that be Jim's replacement, I'm assuming. And let's look at it in light of the new numbers in the fall. Let's have it agendized. Let's hear public comment. And then if the money's there, we can deal with it then. That would be my suggestion. Again, this is me thinking out loud. I think we set protocols in all of our actions, and we might, in the fall, if we find that we have more money now than we do, set a precedent for revisiting budgets and adding to them. But that might also give other people, including people promoting a band, to weigh in on it, and so on. And I think we're setting the proper precedent by going that route. I'm not saying that I object to either the 3.5-hour position or Sheila's other suggestion, combining the two and making it a full-time position with benefits. I'm not commenting on that. I'm talking about procedure. I think we're best served, in my opinion, by waiting for the fall. Let's look at new monies. Hopefully there'll be some. And then inviting the public in an agendized meeting to talk about how best to spend them. And this can be on the top of our list. If other things come up to compete with it, as other things do, we'll look at that. I think then we'll be acting as a representative board and not happenstance or kitchen catch can. Thanks.
Patty.
Two things. I appreciate the thought of process and equity for all in the district that Jeremy is talking about. And I would also like to
have the information of what a job description would look like as a media clerk becomes a media clerk full-time textbook person. Thank you.
Deb?
My concern is that if we want to hire someone for the fall, this would be the time to make a decision for 3.5 and really start the school year out, a full school year. We could have made this decision at first interim last year, but it was like the middle of the year already. So I think if we are genuine about wanting to start believing the effort, we need to start moving forward now. And I understand the idea process, but the media clerk position, is complicated, but the textbook clerk position is not.
Right.
And I don't think that's something that would be that hard. I mean, my preference would obviously be to increase the media clerks to full-time. Mm-hmm. I'm not entirely confident at this point in time that we can do that, and I'm also uncomfortable about creating a part-time position. I'm uncomfortable with the fact that down the road we do want to make the LMAs full-time, that we then have an exterior position, but I'm not that worried about it. I don't think that's going to happen. So that's just my sense is that this has been going on for years. We've always put it off, waiting for the money to come in, and I think we're in a position now, $34,000 is nothing.
Mm-hmm. I've got my line on. I'm going to call myself. I really agree with Deb. This isn't a surprise. It's not like we came up with this. It's been brought to the board a number of times. It is a structural inequity. It feels to me that we have in the short time that I've been on the board funded things that could be considered extras when we have a very basic need to monitor our instructional supplies with textbook clerks. It's a position that was cut, and it hasn't been reinstated as we've been, and I think it needs to be. I don't think that I am in full agreement with Sheila that and others that have mentioned it, that we have a problem. It makes me ill to think of another more benefited positions. But I think that what we could do is deal with the textbook issue now. Another reason to not wait till September is because the high volume of textbooks happen at the beginning of the year, and it falls to our librarians to manage that, at least some of them. So I think it needs to be solved now. And then maybe as first interim rolls out, and as we have further discussion about the benefited issue and about making the library media assistants full-time so that we can not increase the number of unbenefited mm-hmm. positions. I think I just talked in circles just then. You're all nodding, so I feel good about that.
Well, we understand you.
And there's still lights on, so I can't tell who still has a comment. Dee Dee.
I do, but I forgot what it was.
I'd like to say that I'm in agreement with moving forward today with the part-time position. And I'd also like to, as we consider combining a book clerk with the LMA position, and we think about what that job description would look like, and I'd also like to know what the numbers would be, considering that the part-time LMA positions aren't funded currently. And so what we would be asking for is pushing that to full time, and then what would the difference be? Mm-hmm. What are we funding
mm-hmm.
now
That's
versus
right.
what we would need to add
exactly.
to create a full time position that would kind of combine those two? And that information we don't have mm-hmm. today. Mm-hmm.
But it would be different than the chart. Sheila.
Right.
Well, I appreciate all that because as soon as I started to say it, I started to realize I would like to actually see the job description if we were going to make it full-time, that it's a little more complicated. And it sounds like the support is for a half-time anyway. But I still would like to know, is there an answer to the question as to why middle schools have it?
It's a different partial
don't?
Tax.
It's a different
partial
It's
an entirely it's
a different,
different
partial,
partial
tax.
Tax.
That's as simple as that. Okay.
Yeah, J is a K-8
okay.
in the language,
right.
as
got
opposed
it.
To how the last partial tax was a high school and elementary school breakdown.
Okay, so here we are. We have a recommendation to approve the budget, and it currently does not have any of this in it.
So if I'm going to make a motion, what do I do? Is it now?
Yes. Is there any more comments? Any more discussion? No, there's not. So, yes.
Okay. And so before I make the motion, I just want to say that I do agree in terms of making it full-time with Jeremy's suggestion about how we proceed. Okay. So I move that we add 3.5-hour textbook clerks to the budget. The 16-17 budget, right? Is that all I have to say? Does that sound right?
And approve the budget with that.
Yeah, and approve the budget with that.
Yeah,
added.
Start with approve the budget and add.
I move that we approve the budget
with
the addition of 3.5-hour textbook clerks.
For the comprehensive high school.
Not quite solving everything.
Not quite solving everything. Oh, that's true.
Ooh. This is going to die with lack of a second unless somebody seconds the motion.
I would really like to have the motion repeated, please, in plain English.
Could I read that back for you?
Thank you.
Ms. Coonerty moves to approve the 2016-17 budget, including the addition of 3.5-hour textbook clerks for the comprehensive high schools.
And Dee Dee seconded.
And the second from
Dee. Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm going to be voting against this, not because I think it's a bad idea and not because I don't ultimately support turning these positions into full-time and combining them with the other position, which is a name that escapes me, and I apologize for that, but because I think this is... Again, bad business on the part of the board. Not super bad, but bad. Not bad to the bone, but we could do better. Thank you.
Patty.
Jeremy, I want to appreciate that, and normally I lean very much in that direction, but I do want to say that I very much hear Trustee Tracy Prue, and that this has been a piece that has continually come. I've been here for almost 4 years now, and not quite understanding it in the learning curve in the beginning. And I am not sure that I can offer a friendly amendment after a second, but just a piece to address what happens at the small school campus, because we've actually heard firsthand that there really is a need. I'm complicating it, my goodness sake. So I know what the motion is, just putting that out there.
Sheila, you have your light on. Are you going to make a comment?
Yeah. I don't think it's bad. I think that this is a real structural thing that has always been in the schools, and then it dropped out. And I think that the decision is not the same to me as Silver Band, which is why I put my energy and effort on this one, because the Silver Band is not something that has been part of the structure. So I actually am very for this. I think the problem is that we asked for and got the information for 3 clerks, and so now I would also like to request that in the fall we get some information in terms of small schools, because I don't know why. Julian can probably tell us why. I don't know why this keeps happening, that it drops out. But I would like to make a formal request so we get some information in terms of evening that out.
So for the record.
Yes, for the record. Thank you.
Okay, we have. I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. For the record, the board would like to look at the tax revenues that come in from, is that what you're saying?
No, I would like to know what it would cost us to do the proportional.
Sheila wants to revisit the issue in September and look to the, to small schools.
All right.
Right.
Jim.
If I may, there's a motion on the table to second it. And I know some of the questions are, why we have in the past. For 16 months of the time I've been here, we've looked at many potential solutions to many problems. Currently, the structure is simply this. We don't have the money. And I appreciate Member Shelnick's request. Just as a point of discussion from my end, it'd be easy. I mean, one of my children's favorite movie recently was Frozen. And the song is Let It Go. And I could easily just say, Let It Go. But I guess I'm here till June 30th and I feel I have a fiscal responsibility to you as a board. Based upon the information, we know we have a need with the textbooks that are going to initiate very quickly during the summertime. Maybe a short-term solution as we come in September will be the unaudited actuals. And you will then see what dollars have or will be carried forward, what additional dollars come from the state as they finish off the trade reports during the next 60 to 90 days as the staff continues to balance and close out the books. Maybe the short-term solution is to come back with the financial information from my successor, who I'll be seeing tomorrow, to provide the information with the unaudited actuals. And the short-term solution is to work with our sites. What are the number of hours that are needed to kick off the year as part of an extra work agreement with our current individuals, and come back with the solid financial information with you knowing what we do have in September, but make a commitment to assist our staff with the textbook issue that we know has been going on for a number of years.
Deb?
I call a question.
Nancy, can you read the question?
Yes, certainly. To approve the 2016-17 budget, including the addition of three 3.5-hour textbook clerks for the comprehensive high schools.
Mm-hmm. And then, it was seconded, and so now we need to vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? 6-1.
Thank you.
Is that our last thing?
It is.
Okay, we need to adjourn. Thank you very much.
To close session.
And we are returning to close session. Okay, before we go, to closed session, there's somebody who'd like to speak to the board before we adjourn, re-adjourn. Somebody's speaking to us.
I know you're going back to closed session. Addressing the superintendent's contract, and I just want to say that when you do consider that option, there's also the classified employees who also have carryover of vacation time, which the district felt was a burden, and we negotiated, and we no longer have that option. So take that into consideration. It's good for one, it's good for all. Thank you.
What is happening, Sheila?
Look at the bag. She needs a new bag.
Now I have to get all this stuff out. You know, they have canvas bags at Bookshop. Maybe you know someone there. Now what?
Just update the whole budget.
Well, because this is the part I